naturally occurring. So, but I'm off topic.
Can I jump in just for 1 second? Suzette has joined us.
Okay.
So we are now in session.
Okay.
Tammy Clayton is excused, and I think Ted will join us when he gets here. So welcome, everyone. We are now official. All right.
Go ahead. I'd love to just go back to the bills that you sure. brought up when you were talking, and it follows, you know, the comments you just made, specifically House Bill 300 and the mail-in ballots. Given your discussion and what you shared, which I really appreciate, would you say you are not inclined to vote in favor of this bill?
Which one?
The mail-in ballots.
I am not inclined to vote in favor of it, but I'm not going to do a Harry Caray and like stake my political career on it. And so, you know, I would like to keep things the way they are. And here's what I know. The House has like over 35 election bills. Some of them will die in the House. Some of them will get consolidated. We'll have a few come over the Senate. I'm not sure where the appetite is on the Senate. I'll just be blunt with you. I know that Representative Burton's bill is important to the Speaker, and you know there are shenanigans that can happen in the legislature. So if that bill is going to pass and I vote against it, and I know that all my other bills are going to die in the House, then I may vote for it just because it's going to pass anyways. Now if I'm the deciding vote, maybe I decide to sacrifice all my other bills to keep it in. But there are decisions like that that you have to make. And I have some bills that are really important to some of my constituents. And so it's like, if this is going to pass anyways, do I alienate House leadership? So those are the games we get to play up there. And having been on a city council, it's a lot. City councilors are great. This is where the rubber meets the road. I love what you do. But it's a different dynamic when there's 104 legislators. And you got to kind of choose which landmines you want to step on and which ones you don't at times. And I'm not afraid to take a stand. But it's like, what am I taking a stand for if it's going to pass anyway? So
I appreciate that. I understand that. The issue has been raised in our city council that we might discuss taking a position on that bill. Would it be helpful to you were
sure.
you to come to that vote
sure.
to be able to say North
Absolutely.
Salt Lake City has said this is their position
yeah.
and I represent North Salt Lake City?
I would welcome that. I'm not going to guarantee you that's
right.
going to swing my vote for all the other reasons I just said. So
yeah.
And I've had bills held in rules in House. You would not believe some of the shenanigans that go on up there. And
yeah.
I'm not complaining about it. I'm just telling you that's the status quo. And unfortunately, it's getting worse, not better. So
well, Senator Wyler, we would like to see what's going behind those closed caucus doors.
Yeah.
So we would really know what's going on.
You would be terribly bored and disappointed, but I appreciate that.
the second one is joint resolution that you brought up as well on ballot initiatives, and,
yeah.
and you spoke to the fiscal note of $1.4 million
yes.
for the citizen initiative, which I think, and you said this as well, is quite onerous. Does that also incline you that you do not anticipate you will vote in support of that?
So again, I'm going to have to weigh that. Let me go back. So I think, Councilwoman, you, as more than most people know about everything behind Amendment D, but when the Supreme Court weighed in on Amendment D, they basically said that the language in the Constitution on the publication has to be strictly complied with. Now,
I
thought it was
not what the court said.
What did they
say? The court said if it alters or reforms government,
so
then it must be strictly complied with. But it doesn't mean they cannot meet the standard.
Okay, and you are correct. But I'm talking about the publication requirement.
Okay.
So the publication requirement, because the legislature made what I thought was a decent argument, that publication in 1895 or 1904, that the only way to publish something in all 29 counties would have been through a newspaper. But in 2024, we have something called the internet and websites, and you can actually publish something in all 29 counties without putting it in the newspaper. But the Supreme Court said not so fast. This means newspapers. And so in something that I think is a ridiculously tortured misreading, our fiscal analyst office is now taking the position that any proposed constitutional amendment has to not only be published in all 29 counties, and we don't even have newspapers in general circulation in a few of those counties, but not only does it have to be published 60 days before, but it has to be published every day for 60 days. I don't read that in the Constitution, but our fiscal analyst said if we're strictly complying, and so what they're telling us is for constitutional amendments, the state will have to pay that $1.4 million. So what Senator Fillmore is saying is the public is entitled to the same notice for an initiative or a referendum as they should be for a constitutional amendment. So that's the genesis behind his bill. I believe there's another bill that's going to put on a constitutional amendment for the 2026 ballot that would say that you can publish the notice on a website instead of newspapers of general circulation in all 29 counties. So I'm not sure how that's all going to shake out, because I think the $1.4 million is ridiculous.
Well, from my perspective, it's tit for tat.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all it is.
And I'm not going to suggest you're wrong. So.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I, speaking as elected officials, I really feel like engaging citizens as much as possible and making it as easy as possible is a goal that I think most of us share. And this resolution does not feel in line with that spirit at
yeah.
all, which makes it opposite of the goal of government, in my opinion, and would encourage you to vote against it.
Sure. And at the same hand, I mean, San Francisco City, they had a ballot a couple of years ago with over 150 initiatives in it. Portland, the Portland Senate president told our Senate president that they'd become the petri of all bad ideas of initiatives. They've now legalized heroin and all kinds of other drugs through initiatives. And so, you know, I think that there, I mean, we could have a back and forth, and I know there's a lot of politics here, but I think that there's some legitimate concerns that if we have too many initiatives, that there might be some exhaustion from the public saying, come on, you know, why is everything going to the ballot? That's why we elect you guys. And so I know that you're not all going to agree with that, but that's what I'm hearing from my colleagues.
Well, that's what you're hearing, Senator Wyler, but it's not accurate. Those initiatives that we've got, we've had maybe seven on the ballot since 1900,
yeah.
right? And they're not all coming from California. It's not out-of-state funded. These are grassroots efforts,
yeah.
in particular with regard to gerrymandering. That was not California. That was not out-of-state.
Yeah, and I can just say Massachusetts, which has less than half the population of Utah, they had over $100 million of foreign money, not out-of-state, out-of-country money, pour in for initiatives in the last 3 years. And so that's what we're kind of looking at. I don't want to have this debate because I'm not going to change your mind, and I respect your opinion. I'm just saying that not all of my colleagues have evil motives. I think that there is some legitimate concern there.
Well, I would just add, legislating for fear of a risky potential future is really not the current job. It's solving the problems we have in front of us, and this is not one of them.
And I respect your position. I do.
Do you want to carry on your list? Councilmember Baskin?
What do you think about House Bill 198? It's not before you yet.
Yeah, tell me more. I'll pull it up, but tell
it's
me
more. It's highway expansion impacts on signage amendments. And it's basically a billboard bill that's basically saying if there is going to be highways that are going to be widened or so forth, that the relocation criteria is different now. It used to be a mile or a half mile, depending on the location, for the next sign to be really relocated. But the concern that I've got with the League and others is it looks as though the Utah Department of Transportation will not have to pay any of the compensation. And you know, I wanted to mention this to you, Ken. I looked into it. Do you know where it's coming from? Is if it's a non-conforming sign, UDOT doesn't have to pay. In the rule, they define what non-conforming is, which is now highway construction. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I was in a meeting on this bill earlier today with the League staff. The League of Cities and Towns has taken a position of opposition to this bill, mostly for this question of who pays for the relocation or who buys out a billboard. And as you know, it could be very, very expensive to purchase a billboard and make it go away forever. And that burden in the proposed bill shifts from UDOT to the local municipality.
Oh, how fun for you.
In certain circumstances. And so I articulated the position that if a billboard, if an I-15 construction project like we're going to experience here causes the relocation or the loss of a billboard, that is a project development cost, just like if they buy some storage units along the edge of the highway or they buy houses along the edge of the highway. It's a land use just like that.
And but there still has to be fair market value paid for just compensation.
Right, exactly. But to shift that burden to a local city,
yeah,
because the city has a billboard ordinance that might be in conflict with a proposed relocation, that's a hard pill for us to swallow.
And I understand. I tend to agree with your concerns. And I will just say this bill has not been on my radar because, you know, we've got 800 or 900 bills floating around. But it was assigned to a House committee 8 days ago, and they haven't put it on agenda yet, so I'm not sure.
It's being worked.
That's
right
not
now.
A good. I mean, that's not a. Yeah. It's at least it's not moving yet, but it's being run by a member of House leadership, so he's going to have some gravitas.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
So, Senator, on the ranked choice voting, going back to that.
Yes.
Anticipate that the hold will be lifted and the.
No.
Bill? Okay.
There's no way it was ever going to pass the House, and so the question is how much political capital do I spend to get out of committee when I know it's going to die already? It's just it's just one of those, you know.
Why is it so disliked? Is it because
I told you I can't explain the logic. I can just tell you it's not disliked, it's hated.
Huh.
It's despised. It's, you know, it's loathsome.
I'll talk how much I dislike it, but
go ahead.
Well, it's also hated
it's on
by
the agenda later.
It's also hated by county clerks. We've been doing a lot of work since you added this to the agenda.
Well, there's a lot of
I think county clerks have risen up against it.
I can't logically explain the opposition, and I don't think it's a logical opposition. I think it's just it's gotten caught up with this whole election integrity crowd, and it's low-hanging fruit. So, like, if I have to choose between sacrificing ranked choice voting or sacrificing mail-in ballots, I would sacrifice ranked choice voting. I don't know that it's going to be that easy, but that's I'm just telling you where I stand on things. So you kind of got to choose your battles on some of this stuff.
Yeah, with all due respect, your job isn't easy. I'm kind of beating you up tonight.
I actually enjoy the banter. I mean, this is fun for me. I was on the debate team in high school, and I'm a lawyer, and so you're not hurting my feelings. This is the best part of my day so far. So
we'll probably feed you if you survive.
Yeah, I was promised food by Ken. That's the only reason I came. So,
Mayor,
yes,
I don't mean to interrupt Councilmember Baskin, but I have one bill that I want to make sure we bring to the senator's attention. It's a bill we've been working on for some time. It's HB 355. This is Casey Snyder's bill about gravel pits.
And again, a House leadership member, we know what we're talking about.
Now, maybe you know about this. The two sides have made lots of good progress, actually. That is, cities and the sand and gravel industry. And we've gotten a lot closer to a bill that might be acceptable.
So tell me what it's about, because the legislature is using this vanilla language, vested critical infrastructure materials. Is it gravel pits?
It's gravel.
Okay. Gravel pits are always controversial.
And this bill actually does a good thing, which it sort of makes it clear that sand and gravel is different than mining. And frequently those have been mixed, and so there's been some confusion over the years about which regulations apply, but this bill will clear that up. The one piece of the bill that's still in there is, and that most cities are objecting to, is that it gives the owners and operators of those critical infrastructure locations the right to expand without local zoning approval on property that's contiguous to a pit. And you can understand why.
Yeah,
That it's a state priority that we have gravel close by to our construction projects and everything. But that's a pretty unacceptable idea to most communities, including ours. And so
Yeah. No,
I'm just raising that because I
recognize and appreciate those concerns.
I may text you sometime during the session and say, hey, we're ready to vote no on this.
Please do. Please do.
We will. We're still working it. I'm on that working group, and so I'm hoping.
But by the way, we have 4.5 weeks left. Elisa came up and sat with me on the floor last session, which I think she enjoyed. But I'd like to, again, I did this last year, but I'd like to invite any of you to do that. The best way is just to text me. You can come any day. It's Groundhog Day up there. Every day is the same. But right now we're on the floor from 11 to 12, but we'll soon be on the floor from 10 to 12 and 2 to 4 every day. We're kind of transitioning out of our budget appropriations committees and into that. So I think the best thing to come up for is floor time. Sometimes you'll catch a really good debate, you know, and sometimes you'll just see us all vote yes on everything for 2 hours. But
can you unpack this offer a little bit?
What offer? Is
that? The offer to come during
floor. Yeah, just come and sit. You'll just sit right next to me right on the Senate floor while we're debating bills. So.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I think I used to do that before I was in the legislature. I would usually sit in the House, but it's just, if you're a nerd like me, it's kind of fun. So I've never had anybody say, oh, this was horrible. I wish I wouldn't have come. I mean, Lisa used to work up there, so she knows the rodeo.
How can we help you do your job better?
I think like what your city manager said, feel free to text me. If you're watching a bill, I mean, look at, if I agree with you on everything, one of us isn't thinking. Don't take it personal. If I don't vote with you, I can usually explain myself. You may not agree with me, but I'm not just coming out of left field. But I like text. Emails are harder for me because I get about 300 a day. And email feels like work, and text for me feels like fun. So I don't know. I mean, I do go through my inbox, and my intern helps me flag stuff. But text is always better for me.
What's your intern's email?
I can look it up. Her name is Haley. She's Haley, and she's from Utah. I'm sorry. What's the Orem? Utah.
UVU.
UVU. So she's my first intern from UVU, and. Well, her cell phone is 321-695-8559. Let me see if I can find her email.
That's okay. I can look it up.
It's just hkrough@le.utah.gov. H-K-R-O-U-G-H. Or no, K-R-O-G-H, no U. So Haley Crow.
K-R-O-G-H.
H-K-R-O-G-H.
Oh, Karg.
Well, it's Haley Krogh.
Oh, okay. And it's at leutah.gov?
Yeah, le.utah.gov.
Okay.
So I just have one other
yes,
bill
please.
That we're very concerned about, and that's Senator Brammer's bill, SB 154, which gives the state auditor more power to see attorney-client privilege information from a city.
Yeah.
Maybe that's come up for you.
Yeah, this is in direct response to... Sean Reyes and Sim Gill and one other person all of a sudden claiming that their calendar entries are attorney-client privilege. And as an attorney, I'm a little offended by this because the attorney-client privilege has always been designed to protect the client. Yeah. As attorneys, we have to put our client first. And now we see, I'm just going to pick on Sean Reyes because he's a Republican, and Sim Gill gets plenty of criticism without me piling on, but now we see public officials using this to kind of hide their activities that may not be well received if they're on the front page of the Salt Lake Tribune. So I think it's an unfortunate practice, especially from a full-time elected official, which I think that's different than me. And maybe this sounds hypocritical, but I have all of my law clients' appointments on my calendar, so I think it's a little different because I'm part-time legislator, full-time attorney. But this is clearly just for our audits, because when our legislative attorneys, our legislative auditors were auditing Sean Reyes, he was insisting, he was withholding a lot of stuff from them claiming attorney-client privilege. But he's not the client, he's the attorney. So it's just a weird thing to me. And we fund his office, and we've never had anybody do that to us before. So that's what it's about.
It got plenty of press, that's for sure.
Yeah, not good press, but, you know.
I know you're the chair of the Judiciary, Senate Judiciary Committee.
Standing Committee, yeah.
Yeah, Standing Committee. So could you reflect on this idea of doing away with justice courts?
You know, the courts have come to us and asked us to abolish some of them. So we're abolishing one in Logan. And I mean, I don't think this is like legislators being vindictive. I think this is the judicial counsel, or, you know, the court has a lobbyist named Michael Drexel. From my understanding, because I have one of those on my agenda tomorrow, and I asked Chris Wilson, because he's running the one for Logan, that's where he lives. I said, is there any opposition? He said, oh, he kind of laughed. He said, no, the courts asked me to run this. And so,
at least in those two particular jurisdictions.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's going to be statewide. But I think it's a matter of efficiency. On the same note, I know some of the district court judges up in Farmington, and they have contracts with some of the cities. And I'll just tell you, the judges from Par Brown, they're like, I don't know if I'd have done this if I knew I was going to be, you know, a justice court judge one day of the week. Because as district court judges, they're kind of handling some stuff that I think that they think is below them. And so, anyway, but yeah, I don't think there's any controversy there at all. Or
so let me ask you, are you aware, and I know you can't talk about protected bills, but
yeah,
with the League of Women Voters decision and so forth, do you know if there's something brewing to get back at the judiciary?
I would be shocked if there's not four or five or six or seven bills brewing. And I'll tell you a couple of them.
Okay.
So I just heard about these yesterday. And so one of them, so right now we send the judges to JPEC and then they recommend whether they're retained or not. So one of the ideas, we'll have the appellate court judges and the Supreme Court judges, they would come back, instead of JPEC, they would come back to the Senate, and then the Senate would recommend that they be retained or not retained. That's one of them. There's a growing animosity in the legislature towards JPEC, and this is the Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission, which I think is unwarranted and unfounded, because we have had eight judges who were up for review who, instead of going to the voters with a negative recommendation, they quietly retired. And so I will say JPEC is working, but because like judges aren't being publicly flocked and scorned, some of my colleagues think that JPEC is failing. So it's just a fundamental disagreement, but I'm quite confident I'm right and they're wrong. So on that particular issue.
I sit on JPEC.
Yeah, I didn't know that. So and I'm sorry, because I know that's a huge commitment.
It is huge.
So
yeah. But I think it does good work.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay. But beyond that, any other judiciary bills?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head, but we can have a conversation offline. Okay. By the way, I'm the one that ran a bill 5 or 6 years ago that hired you, the employment law attorney. So when like female judges got blatantly discriminatory comments, you guys don't see them. That was me. So just so you know, so it costs a little bit of money, but it's worth it.
One other bill is a bill by Colomer, who has stated there's no class action for selling private information.
Okay, I'm not aware of that one. I mean, I believe you. I'm just.
I want to alert you to that one. Please look at it, because it's very troubling to me. Because it seems like it's self-dealing.
Okay, I don't think he runs class actions, but I know what you're saying. So.
Yeah, it prohibits class actions, and he doesn't want to be sued for selling his private information.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
He's a landlord that sells information about bad tenants.
Well, his dad's law firm represents the Utah Apartment Association,
right?
So. And he did disassociate with that a year or two ago. He doesn't work for his dad anymore, but I hear what you're saying.
Okay, good.
So, well, thanks, everyone. this is what, you know, I should be doing. I'm sorry Melissa's not here. I think she enjoys coming to these council meetings. So I got to do all the talking, so that's not bad for me. So.
Thanks for making time.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for all you do. I know you guys have tougher jobs. I mean, in very real sense, I think your job is tougher than mine, because everything that comes to city council is very personal. It's like it's the person down the street, you know, whereas I'm doing stuff that people in St. George are mad at me and people in Logan are mad at me, but they couldn't find Woods Cross on a map with a compass, so it kind of helps me out.
But in contrast to that, we have a staff that's just absolutely fabulous, right?
I believe you.
And we've got six of us. You've got 104, and you don't have that kind of staff.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
a lot is on your shoulders, where we get a lot of help.
We have a little bit more staff than we did 10 years ago. I will say that. So it's helped.
We appreciate you, Senator.
Thank you. Thanks, council member.
And thank you from me as well. I really appreciate you being here. One thing that we talked about as a council, I'm so grateful that you'll come here during this session, but we'd also like to invite you to come back throughout the year.
Invite me anytime.
Not just the relevant...
Especially if you're going to feed me. You know, you invite me every meeting.
Okay, well, expect an invitation sometime during the interim.
Ta-da. We'll do a better job of that in the interim.
No, it's so great.
Thank you.
It's probably my fault for not thinking of that.
I probably told you this last year, but I called out Bountiful. I'm like, Centerville feeds me. North Salt Lake feeds me. You guys never feed me. So anyways, I do remember it. So, all right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Todd. Let's take a quick break, go grab, and then we'll turn it over to Beth.
The recording will still be rolling, just so you all know. So go ahead and turn off your mics, but for a break, we won't turn off the recording.
Amen. So, I mean, like, I'm getting lined up here, so.
Yeah.
I think it's good to be really direct and lay it out. I admire that. I think that's a little bit of a piece. That's right. I appreciate his candor because I'm not sure we get that from everybody.
I know.
Elisa in the kitchen.
I'll go see.
And if you guys just want to tell me when you'd like me to start, I would be happy to do that.
We'll never have another issue. Can't afford it.
All right, let's keep moving on here. Next item is discussion of the city transit service. I'd like to welcome Trustee Holbrook from the Utah Transit Authority. And your guests you can introduce. Thanks.
Yes, I'm happy to introduce them. Thank you so much, everyone. I love North Salt Lake. You guys are close to my neck of the woods, and I'm excited to see all of the things that I think we're going to be expanding and talking about. For the record, my name is Beth Holbrook, and I'm the trustee who represents Davis, Weber, and Box Elder counties. And on my right, left, I'm like, I point and I talk. Do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, Chanda?
Chandler Butler, in a new position at UTA, Government Relations Manager. So I'll be focusing on government relations with city and county officials. So looking forward to working closely with you all.
And I think he's been here 2 weeks?
Yeah.
And then go ahead, Russ.
Hi, I'm Russ Fox. I'm the Planning Director for UTA.
So what we're talking about this evening is exactly in Russ's neck of the woods. This is what he and his team focus on, is that long-range and short-range planning. Tonight we're focusing on the five-year service plan, which is going to be more immediate. Our first, I can get this up here. Here we go. So as you can see, 2025 is already here, and this is going to be service for the next 4 years. And our change day now, we have revised some of the things that we used to do, and one of the things is our change day. So April 13th is our actual change day. So we're going to start to do communications out, really letting people know about some of these potential changes. And I think that given the service for this year for North Salt Lake, specifically Redwood Road, I think you guys will be really excited. So. And please feel free to ask me any questions. If something, you know, captures your mind and you just want to ask, you don't have to wait till my presentation. I like to do interactive. So this is just an overall perspective of all the changes that we will be doing in the next couple of years. And you can see it's identified by date. So 25, 26, 27, 28, and 29. And one of the things that's not on here that I will talk about a little later is front runner service too. So here's what's going to come in April of 2025, so this year. So one of the things that is really identifiable, certainly in North Salt Lake and also in South Davis in general, is the bus route, the 470. And the 470 is what we would consider to be our workhorse. It is one of our stronger riderships on this service. And it is from Ogden right now today all the way to downtown Salt Lake City. And the interesting dynamic of this is that we're going to weave in the discussion about the Davis-Salt Lake connector. Now, that's not going to be in the next
in 2025, but it is going to have impact. And so what we are doing is we're trying to figure out strategies to basically better align some of our operational elements. And this is one of those. And as you can see, it's going to be hitting some different areas. And part of that is, for those of you who are familiar with trolleys, Layton City currently has a trolley, and we are going to be changing that, and we're going to actually be including more service into Layton as well, and that includes their west side. And for context, just like North Salt Lake, a lot of the west side development is actually really going on in those areas in Davis County. And so we're trying to basically align more of our service as we move forward. It's going to hit the Davis Tech campus, which is in Kaysville. It's going to actually have a lot of significant changes on there. And I know the maps aren't great because you can't see some of the actual streets, but please feel free to ask, because Russ here is an expert. So the other elements are the Layton Hills Mall, and that's going to be a connector in a different way. If anyone goes up to Snow Basin, that is actually currently ski service right now. So that is one of the features that goes up there as well. And we do get a fair amount of traffic on that service as well. Just for context, the Midtown Trolley is one of the vehicles that basically is going to become obsolete. And mostly because the market in the United States has shifted fundamentally for bus manufacturers. There are only two in the country. And for context, one of them is relatively close to us. They're in California, and the other one is in Ohio. I believe it's Ohio. Is that correct? I think that's right. And the challenge is that it's a very competitive market for Buy America, and so buses are a little bit of a challenge. And so we feel that by integrating our existing 40-foot fleet, it's going to allow us to be more operationally nimble. And that's a key thing, too, as in addition to making sure we have sufficient operators. So here's the one that is really going to be of value in your neck of the woods. This is the new route, the 417.
Sorry, I just wanted to ask, do we contemplate any change to frequency or service hours for the 470?
That is a great question. And yes, we do contemplate frequency. It's now going to be every 15 minutes. And I don't know if the hours, Russ, are you aware of the hours changing?
No. I think I'm trying to think. I'm just looking at it. As far as like the frequency for this year, it's staying the same. So there's no.
So it's 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's still 30 minute service.
I apologize. It does change later on.
It's as we get further into the 5-year service plan that you'll see some of those things start changing.
And again, that will align with the Davis Salt Lake connector, which is 2028.
So I'll throw this out in part because maybe you can react to it as you go through the rest of your slides, but North Salt Lake is not well served by Front Runner, and that's okay. But that means we rely on the bus. And the challenge that we've got in North Salt Lake is after, I think, 6 p.m., the frequencies fall off the map. I mean, it's basically hourly after 6 p.m. So if you are working even a little late or you're a student, you're in the transit desert after that, even though we're a contiguous suburb to Salt Lake City. So it's a big kind of issue for those that depend on transit, students and the like. Again, because the model is in Davis County, you got the Front Runner, don't worry, but it doesn't really serve us.
Yeah, and I appreciate that context. And I'm going to talk about Front Runner in just a little bit. We do also have another major route, that's the 455. And for context, the 455 today and in 2025, that goes from Weber State University, so East Weber County, all the way through Davis County. So think Highway 89 is the bulk of all of that travel. And then it ends up on to Orchard Drive and then heads all the way to the University of Utah Research Park. And that is also a very frequently utilized route. And you are correct about the 60-minute service, but it does, I think it ends at 7. But yes, you're correct. And there is a lot of elements that we are trying to incorporate as we slowly build up service. One of our classic challenges, and I don't know if you recognize this, but for context, in 2022, right after the pandemic, we had what we would consider to be a fairly significant operator shortage. And so we basically had to retool and restructure how we do that service in order to have sufficient operations to cover everything that we're trying to do and include expansion. And so it is going to take us a couple years to get up to that level and still keep not just our new service, but our existing as well. So this is the route 417, but Ted, our council member, that is a great point. You are right. We always have to be contemplating how we can continue to look at connectivity and access to our system. And I believe that we will get there, but again, part of that is going to become that shift to the Davis LA connector.
And I guess when you leave here, you know, you all may have feel like, okay, we've got our Davis County strategy and it's sound. And I'm just really wanting you to remember the Davis County strategy overall doesn't work for your southernmost community because we're south of the Woods Cross station.
A front runner, correct.
And I suggested once to Beth, and she, of course, ignored it, but that rather than the what I call UTA Uber, the rideshare.
On demand, yeah.
Rather than pick us up and take us 10 minutes the wrong way to catch a bus, that they ought to just service Salt Lake, downtown Salt Lake. If they went from Bountiful and North Salt Lake and Woods Cross right into Salt Lake and drop people off, I think they'd get used a lot more.
Structurally, though, they would also be in traffic. And as you know, we're going to be redoing I-15 in South Davis area all the way to Farmington from Salt Lake City on 4 South. So that, you're correct in some respects, especially in this area where it is so quick to get to downtown that almost any service is a backtrack of some kind. And we recognize that. And we know that there are always improvements we can make, but we want to make sure that we're making them structurally within our budget and operationally so that we can continue to serve it. But very excellent points. And I did take it under advisement, Mayor. I just want you to know. Route 417, the proposed change, this is going to be new service altogether. And as you can see, this is going to be the north-south service between the Woods Cross Station, so 5th South, and all the way to 1940 West in Salt Lake City via Redwood Road. Now, Redwood Road is probably one of the service areas that has no service today for North Salt Lake. And so we think this is going to be a vast improvement, and we're really excited to be offering this. And as you can see, this is a 30-minute service on weekdays. We don't anticipate weekends at this stage. Again, when Enerver were introducing a new service, obviously it takes people time to adjust their schedules. There's a lot of things in motion, and so we try to balance that out. So in 5 years, maybe there is a demand for the weekends, for instance, and we do take a look at that.
Yes. Sorry, are you moving past this?
I was. Go ahead.
May I speak to this then? I live near this route, and I live in this area that has not had bus service and have been advocating and hoping for that for a really long time, and I'm really excited that that will happen. However, what I see here on this plan does not feel like it will actually serve the needs. What we're doing here by only connecting neighborhoods on the west side, there's not a demand to connect West North Salt Lake with West Salt Lake. There is a demand to connect West North Salt Lake to downtown and up to the university, and I do not anticipate almost any riders are going to pick up the bus in West North Salt Lake, take it out to West 1900 West in Salt Lake, and then have to go to the hub downtown and then take another train to get up to the university. That is not user-friendly ridership. I would absolutely advocate for a bus service from West Side North Salt Lake that goes either just east to this bus or downtown, because the bulk of people are not trying to get to West Side Salt Lake from this area, nor are the people who live in West Side Salt Lake trying to get where we are. These are just not communities that need to be connected, but getting connected to downtown or to the university is what needs to happen, and I don't see that this provides a route that's going to feel really appealing to a lot of users. That's just my concern.
I appreciate that, and we'll take that under advisement and have a discussion about that. Is there anything you wanted to add to that, Russ?
Just one of the things I just wanted to point out is this is, by adding this route as one of our new routes, this is actually one that has the projected highest ridership of all of the new routes that we're adding throughout the system. So it's we're pretty excited.
How do you project that though? Like when I live in this area, and when I would like to ride the bus or something, there's no way I would do this.
We have a crazy, we do what's called propensity. It's a propensity index. So we look at like how many passengers per hour is potential. We look at what the land uses are around it. We look at who are like zero car households. We look at, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that go into these formulas that provide us those projections. And typically they're pretty good. So
is there still an opportunity for public comment on this new route?
No,
not for this year.
Not for this one.
But this will come up again, and this, in part, what we do is every 2 years we take a look at the service that we have on the road right now at this time, and then we take a look at it, and there are always room for modification. So what will happen in essence is that we will give this route 2 years to, well, really like a year and a half, and then in that second year we'll be doing the analysis again. So every 2 years we're doing analysis, and that takes into consideration any ridership adjustments, anything that has changed, and what those impacts are. So there is going to be an opportunity to have a comment period, and it will be it was last year around October of 24, so October of 26 will be an opportunity, am I getting that right, to have modifications of, if any, that are necessary.
Yeah.
So in October of 24, there was the option to give public comment on this route?
That's correct.
Well, that's unfortunate, because I have been watching and waiting for this for a long time, and that never crossed my awareness that was coming, that there was a chance to give public comment, because I feel really confident the people who live in this area are not going to feel like this bus route is serving what their needs were. It's just not taking you downtown, which is where they want to go.
We started a lot of community engagement actually back in July of last year.
So I remember I made comments like on UDOT and some other places, but I don't remember this route. Like, this is the route I've been watching and really excited about. So I'm glad
that
there's action happening.
I am going to take a note of that right now and make sure that all the links are sent out to everyone individually on the council as well as your staff, so that we can make sure that we get your input, because I would really love to know what the impacts are of creating this new route, because everything that we are looking at from all of our data and potential projections, and it's all based on demographics and how that connectivity looks, shows us to be successful. But we wanted to make sure we're being successful. So again, you will have the opportunity, and I'll make sure that you get a link so that you have plenty of time to review and give comments. I apologize about that. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Can you just talk through what does happen on the south end of that route? Just clarify.
You mean, where does it go?
Like, does it stop? Does it continue south into Salt Lake County, or what?
Yes.
No. Go ahead.
Oh, so I was going to say, so this does have basically one thing you would have to do with this route is you would transfer to basically the 217, and as far as like being able to have that additional connection that then does take you south in Salt Lake County. So because we're also adding, so we're excited, Redwood Road for the most part is going to be served all the way from, you know, from this endpoint all the way down into the very end of Salt Lake County. Not that, you know, for North Salt Lake, it probably doesn't matter. But if you ever wanted to get down to Bluffdale, we're going to finally have that opportunity to have that, because we will have routes that will go all the way down Redwood Road from the Woods Cross all the way down into to Bluffdale City Hall.
So if I wanted to get to the university, I'd have to have three different transportation options, right? Like, take this route to the terminal and then take another bus to the train station and then the train up to the university?
So what I would do if I were you, I would take on demand to the bus stop for 455. That's the one that goes right to the University of Utah Research Park.
I agree with you entirely. That's where I wish this bus went.
And I appreciate that. And I'm glad that you're being so frank with me, because this is helpful for me as well. So thank you for that. I appreciate it. Any other questions on? Okay, thank you. So now, This is going to be the biggest change. And again, this is April 2028. And this is a little bit further projection into the future. Just as, again, just a reference point, on-demand is staying. There's has been some question about how do we end services, and that is not the case. So you will have on-demand. That, again, is the geofenced Uber-based, well, not Uber, I should say app-based program to connect you with anything in our system. And this is the biggest change that we're going to start to see, and that is the changes to 417, and that's going to go further on the east-west portion of that. So, for instance, it's going to go up to Lakeview Hospital. It's going to become almost that local connector piece, and it goes obviously to Legacy Crossing in Centerville. And the reason for some of the modifications in 2028 is for the Davis-Salt Lake Connector. And you should have a handout on the Davis-Salt Lake Connector and the proposed route as it exists. When we first did this, it was proposed that we do this from Woods Cross Station all the way to the University of Utah. And that has been subsequently modified to incorporate Farmington all the way to the U of U Research Park. And this has been actually tremendously popular, and we've had a lot of positive comments about doing this. And just for context, this service is going to be a 15-minute service. It's going to be an express bus. We have been calling it a BRT, which is a bus rapid transit, and we go back and forth on that, but this one is not going to have any dedicated lanes, so we're going to have frequency that's going to navigate this. And there are going to be stops that are identified by and branded based on whatever we call the Davis-Salt Lake Connector, and we don't know what that is quite yet. Davis County Commission has been very thoughtful, and they are working to coordinate the local match so that we can submit this project into federal funding in August of this year. And we're really trying to accelerate this project. We believe that this is going to be one of the core projects prior to the Olympics. Now, for context, none of our projects are just simply Olympic-driven. They are all growth-related because all of us, no matter how much we adore the Olympics individually, we also have to live here every day. We have to work here every day, and our kids have to navigate this as well. And so what we are trying to do is to increase that level of service so that we have all of these things in place so that when the Olympics come, we can easily help to navigate people from to and from locations.
What is your target frequency for the Davis-Salt
Lake? Davis-Salt Lake, 15 minutes. And that will also have TSP, which is transit signal prioritization. And what that does is basically the bus communicates with all of the lights that UDOT has. And that is a joint project between UDOT and UTA. So that our buses, if they are within a certain amount of the intersection, they will keep the light green so that the bus can continue through. And we think that that ultimately is going to be, again, a real value connection piece to that because you move faster.
Does the Davis-Salt Lake Connector, and maybe we don't know yet, but do we know how that may help with service hours problems? The length of the day, how long?
Oh, for
how
operators.
Long, how long the frequent service lasts into the night kind of thing?
That's a great question. I don't know, but it looks like Russ might.
Yeah, so it's going to primarily operate as a tier one service. So it'll run from, basically it'll have that 15-minute service. Let me get to it real quick. When we define a tier one service, it is 15 minutes that operates from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., and then it goes to 30 minutes up until 12 a.m. That's during the weekdays. And then on Saturday, it does operate on, I believe it's going to operate on Sundays as well, so it's going to have Saturdays and Sundays. So 15-minute service again from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., and then from the rest of the time, it'll go 30 minutes from 7 p.m. to 12. And then Sunday is just 30-minute service from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Ted's trying to convince us he works long hours.
I am sure he does. I see him at a lot of different spots. As I see all of you, I was happy. I was fortunate enough to see several of you at the league the other day. Okay, so the next change is going to be the Route 55. And you're going to see what says up there is a discontinuation of Route 455. that is actually going to stop in Farmington. So what we're basically doing is creating Farmington as a mobility hub in terms of our connectivity. So as you go further north, anything that you want to connect to within Weber County and Box Elder is going to have a location in Farmington Station. And so what we are then going to do is the 417 is going to pick up that local slack, and then the Davis-Holly connector will take the place of that 455 and head again into Salt Lake City at the University of Utah. And so the all of the impacts are Farmington to Salt Lake City, just to clarify that. And it is going to be an all-electric bus system with multiple chargers as well as charging facilities on both ends. And one of the value adds that we're also looking at is how we can navigate and utilize service more efficiently from the operations side. And operationally, South Davis, a lot closer to our buses at our Salt Lake Central location. So that means that our operators don't have what they have right now, which is a 5 to 6 hour day. Once they start in Weber County, in Ogden, and then head all the way down, that's a long day for a bus operator. And we feel like these efficiencies are going to really enhance service as well. But it helps us on the operations. Okay, so here's another interconnector, which is the 400. And again, this is April of 2028. Again, this is going to be implemented as a result of the Davis-Salt Lake Community Connector. Goodness, that is a long name. And as you can see, all of those stops, again, that's really designed to make sure that we're connecting more locally. So that will have impacts on Orchard Drive, Victory Road, the Woods Cross Station, all of those locations.
So this replaces for us, for our community, it replaces the 455.
Correct. And the 470. You'll hear the 470X sometimes occasionally. That's what our planners refer to, and it is the Davis-Salt Lake connector. And I'm so sorry, what was there a comment? Thank you for that, because I cannot read that that far.
The color is, just follow the light blue outline. Do you see that?
So it looks like it's further east, if that's helpful for context.
Yeah.
I like that. That is a great. So the 470X Davis-Salt Lake connector is going to now be the key connector between Farmington and Salt Lake City. And again, it is going to be going in on 3rd West. That is something that Salt Lake City requested. For context, they have also invested heavily in their Second South route. And that is a high frequency location. So that they narrowed it down so there's only one lane of traffic and one dedicated lane of bus, north and south, or east and west, excuse me. And again, there's probably so many routes on there that you could have service every 5 minutes. But the goal is to get to Research Park with the Davis-Salt Lake connector. And then, as we talked about, the 455 will no longer be a number in South Davis County from Farmington on. And as you can see, this is basically just a reiteration of everything I talked about. And then these are just some other routes that can be incorporated into Davis-Salt Lake connector. And as I referenced again, and I see that you have a question, I'm happy to entertain a question, council member.
I'm sorry.
Please
a
don't apologize. I love
all
this.
Of my comments. So we benefit from on-demand, mm-hmm. which we're grateful for. Our service hours on that are shorter than other spots, and there may be a good reason for that. Do you know the reason why we have shorter hours, or is... And if there is not a good reason, can you just look into that as a possible extension for those hours? I think it stops at 9.
It stops at 9, that's correct. And I would leave it to Russ to answer, like, I think the details on that.
Yeah, so for an example, Salt Lake City, so we have kind of like a as far as like what we modeled as far as like the system, going until 9 o'clock. Salt Lake City West Side, that on-demand service, Salt Lake City, they pay for that service, and they also pay for the additional hours of operation for the on-demand for that one. So that is one. And then Salt Lake County, yeah, I think that's just, as that came out as the pilot, and that overall initial operation, that became so heavily used, and we're actually seeing some actually really great increases in the on-demand services being provided out here too. So it's really starting to get utilized. We're excited.
In other words, utilization of the system will in part drive that discussion, but there's also the cost factor. And as you know, we have to balance it out in terms of how we are looking at getting service onto the ground, adding new service, and keeping it fully staffed and funded. Those are the key components that we have on that. But we'd be happy to take a look at the hours in terms of the on-demand service. That is, I think, as we get further into this, and I can talk on this briefly, but it's obviously not in the five-year service plan, but as we get to FrontRunner 2X, which is the strategic double tracking, that's going to become a different model as well. Number one, it's going to have Sunday service. Number two, it's going to have 15-minute service on peak and 30 minutes off peak on our FrontRunner system, which is going to really be transformational in terms of our connectivity. And so part of those discussions about hours can then translate when that changes around, because now you have service that is completely different than what exists today, right? It's going to be enhanced. And the Sunday service is the thing that we hear about the most on our FrontRunner and track system. Our track's green line goes to the airport every 15 minutes, but if you fly back in on Sunday, you can't get north or south. You can only go to Salt Lake and West Valley. So we know that that's going to be a big thing as well, and I think that that's where the complementary hours and the discussions about how to connect, that's where that gets more fine-tuned. So, but that was jumping way ahead. Just for context. And
I'll just add one more thing that right now, so we don't have like a set standard for like, here's how we operate an on-demand service, right? So we are actually coming up with establishing some of those service thresholds and establishing some of those things. So that's something that we're actually working on right now. So that feedback is really good to hear for us to take that into consideration.
Thank you so much. I sense the enthusiasm and the hopefulness in all of this, and that's really great to see. One question that I've got is, I know you've got labor issues. You don't have enough operators, or maybe you don't have enough people for tracks or whatever. How many of the people, well, this is a hard question, but it's perception. I've never been on tracks when somebody's been caught as a scofflaw. Do you actually have people come and check for tickets?
We do.
Okay, and is it a regular event?
It is not designed to be regular, because then that can also allow people to bypass it as well. And so what you really want to do is not be looking at it at the same time every day, for instance. And it's our police officers are also looking at today, in today's environment, they are looking to see if everyone is paying their fare. So there will be random checks. Sometimes if you're on FrontRunner, for instance, you will have train hosts that do that. For context on tracks, our operators don't leave their vehicles. So there is not that level of, checking in the Salt Lake City downtown core, which is a free fare zone, and Salt Lake City pays extra for that. We do, however, have what we have called our tracks ambassadors. And those ambassadors are on our platforms, and they are on the Blue Line train, and we're just shifting out of a pilot program on this. And we've been funding this because there are a lot of people who ride our system who maybe are homeless or looking for how can they get to a destination of services or some other component to that. And our tracks ambassadors are really designed to help that person connect to services. They are not there to do fare checks, however. They're clearly there to just get people to where they might need to go. And there's that goes all the way to Sandy, for context, on the Blue Line. Or excuse me, Draper. I apologize for Draper. Whoops. It goes all the way to Draper and through downtown Salt Lake. And so those ambassadors are all throughout there, and they will check and see if there's anything that they can do to help people who look like they might need some help. And they do actually have, they have some really great statistics, and I'd be happy to get that. I can't remember it off the top of my head, But it has made a noticeable difference in terms of safety and the perception of safety, which I'm wondering if that's kind of where you were going with that a little bit. It's a great question.
A random question.
Oh, yes, please.
About, if you went out I-80 to about 80th West, there's a bunch of front-runner trains just parked there.
I wish they were front-runner trains on 80th. On I-80. That is actually Stadler. They, I'm very excited to announce officially, we actually announced this a couple months ago, they were awarded the contract to build us new rail cars for all of our Trax Blue Line. So our Trax Blue Line has steps inside, which means it's not level board, and they will be building those vehicles. And in addition to that, they're going to be expanding their facilities because this is their first foray into light rail vehicles. And thank you for the question. You probably are seeing Caltrain, which are red and white, and they actually are going to California, as you might have guessed from the name, and they have been slowly doing high-speed rail. And so those cars are slowly being built out. In addition to that, shout out to Stadler. They also have a contract with MARTA, which is in Atlanta, and several other major transit agencies across the country. But this is their first foray to work not only with UTA, so we're going to have locals make our local trains, but also this allows them to expand their manufacturing facility and to offer that to other agencies.
Any follow-up about the Route 417?
Mm-hmm.
So where the terminus of the route on North Temple, is there a bus that they could pick up there directly that will go into the main hub?
And when you say main hub, do you mean Salt Lake Central or do you mean something else?
Salt Lake Central.
Okay. So there is the 200, I believe. Is that correct? And that hits North Temple? I apologize. I'm using my memory.
Yeah,
so I please know. Forgive me, but I'd be happy to get you the information. Would you mind taking notes on that? Thank you. I will make sure that I get you that information, but there are several bus routes that hit that North Temple Front Runner station, and they do the connection. So either you can obviously go up the stairs, hit the Green Line, and then you can head further into Salt Lake City downtown, or you can take buses. There is a bus that goes on 2nd South, again, the 2nd South area that Salt Lake City has improved, that has dedicated bus lanes. But I don't know the numbers, and I'm afraid to give you a number
That
I'm incorrect on. So
let me ask, you said the Redwood Front Runner Station. Does this bus go to the Redwood Front Runner Station?
The West Valley one, yes.
The 417 will stop at so you could take the 417 to the Redwood Front Runner Station?
There's not a Redwood Front Runner Station, just to clarify. There is a Green Line tracks, is that correct?
How far west is that?
2,700 west.
So that's farther west than what this route will go.
Farther west than that.
So you have to take another to connect.
That's correct, yes. So did you?
I think there's a station there worth double checking, but I think there's a station that they would walk right to that's a Green Line station.
Okay.
Correct. It's the one that goes to the airport, but you can just, if you stop at North Temple, which is not our Salt Lake Central, that's the next stop, but North Temple is where a lot of those apartment buildings have been built up recently. And if you go up the stairs, you can catch the Green Line. And the Green Line will go to West Valley and Redwood Road area, and it will go via Salt Lake downtown first. If you go and you head west, you'll just hit the airport and then return back.
And
thank you for that.
When is this bus route scheduled to begin?
April 13th is the date that it will start. Great. And we are going to try to really work. We will especially make sure that North Salt Lake has all of our communications so that we can get that sent out, and you'll have it prior to our actual change day. And we'll, if there's any questions, we are making appointments right now. So we're making appointments with Layton City, Davis County, everywhere that we can to make sure that we're getting as much communicated to your citizens as possible.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. The station that this will hit is the 1940 West North Temple Station. So, because it feeds right into, there's the services for the blind. So that's where the 217 and the 417 will meet up. But there's also, again, there's the track station, the green tracks line.
Yeah. That will meet right there at the
it exists.
1940
yeah.
West.
Yeah,
drop.
That's right.
Great,
yeah.
Thanks.
I knew there was something, I just couldn't
good
remember.
Good clarification.
Where it was at.
Thank you very much. Really quickly, I did just have something, and I apologize. I know I've gone really long, but I'm thrilled to answer these questions. I just want you to know that, because I don't get a chance to talk as much as Senator Wyler, who might not be here anymore. But I do love it. I just wanted to give you some of our analysis on economic impacts. And this is basically every dollar that has been spent on our on UTA has equated to $5.11 in economic returns throughout our service area. And we want to point that out because we feel like we are an infrastructure, and we want to obviously continue to always improve. But just like electricity and everything else, we have to have investments in it that are meaningful and that are connecting people to where they live or work or want to enjoy our lifestyle. So take a look at that. I know I'm taking a lot of time. I'm happy to answer any other questions, and feel free to text me, that's my cell phone, or email me with any other questions, and I can definitely go deep dive. And fortunately, you have a Councilmember Knowlton, who is very well versed on a lot of our big projects.
All right.
Thank you again, Mayor and Council members.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mayor, do you mind if I just ask one question while you're packing up? On this, on the Davis-Salt Lake connector, we haven't really heard as one of the cities if you're going to be looking for contributions from local communities, and when would we have those discussions?
Oh, that's a great question.
To know what kind of obligation is the city going to have?
So we have been in a lot of communications with Davis County, and Davis County has decided, because we're trying to expedite this a little bit, they have decided to be that local match. And so we are pulling it out of those third quarter funds. Whether or not Davis County asks for a super local match from you, from Bountiful, from Woods Cross, I am not sure.
Okay.
But because of the expedited nature of this, Davis County has agreed to do that piece of it. So that helps you, I think, in some ways, because you can budget in a different way than
it
maybe
does.
You had thought.
Yeah,
great question. I'm sorry I forgot to talk about that.
We can also tell Davis County to just pound sand, you know, whatever.
Just write a check.
Not
Come
that we
on.
Would, but I mean, we could.
For context, TTIP has already put in $18 million into this
great.
Project as well, which is a great additional local match. And Salt Lake County has invested their portion of it as well. So we feel like this is a really good, really great project, actually, on the federal side.
You think that it will meet the schedule that you've put
yes.
on this flyer then? That's great.
Yes.
That's great news. It's taken a long time.
It has. Yeah. I know. Thank
good.
You so much for the you question.
Bet. Thank you. Heidi?
Thank you for allowing me to present the December 31st, 2024 financial report. This report represents numbers that were halfway through the fiscal year, so 50% spent. There is no unusual activity to report for the period. We are at that time in our fiscal year where we're spending down fund balance until our revenues catch up with our expenditures. That's typical for this time of year. I indicated that a little bit in the memo about how our spend down is slightly ahead or better, in a better position than we were at this time last year. I wanted to present some information. This is kind of a follow-up to the auditor's presentation from the last city council meeting. And it's related to the fund balance and the general fund and those fund balance reserves that we've carried. This is a 20-year history of what those reserves have been. So statutorily, up until 2021, the city was allowed to keep 25% of a year's general fund revenue in fund balance reserves. And you can see we've been as low as 17% in 2005, and then lowered down to 15% in 2010. You had the recession in between there and some other things that have happened, all the way up to the close of the last fiscal year 2024, where we were at 32% of fund balance. That has now increased as of 2021. We're allowed to keep 35% of that general fund revenues. So you can see we made some budget amendments already this fiscal year. One of them was for a contribution to the Hatch Park project of $1.5 million, and then some additional projects that will spend down that fund balance estimated by about $403,000, and that's just for general government operations. So we anticipate that we will get more into that 19 to 20% range by the end of this fiscal year. I'm still within an acceptable range statutorily. We have to have at least 5%. So of course we're well above that, but this is, you know, a generally accepted range for any type of reserve policy for fund balance. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about that, why we have that balance. It equates to about 2 months worth of general fund expenditures, and it's always to help with emergency costs, or so we have a drop in revenues and sales tax or one of our other main revenue streams in the general fund. Second, I wanted to throw up on the calendar here the 2026 budget calendar, because we are already ready to consider next year's budget. Some of these dates are proposed. We do typically have a Saturday budget retreat, and the proposed date for that is March 22nd. We're also proposing to do a capital review in advance of the retreat to discuss some of the projects that we are anticipating coming up over the next 5 years, and look at scheduling of those and looking at what we really want to include in that 2026 budget. The May 6th tentative budget adoption is a statutorily required agenda item, as well as that final budget adoption item on June 17th. And we typically hold the public hearing that first meeting in June, with adoption at the the second meeting in June. So were there any questions on any of the items in the financial report? All right, thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Let's adjourn for, yeah. Let's adjourn for, and we'll reconvene in 8.5 minutes.